Welcome to the Star Ledger College Basketball Podcast. I am Brendan Prunty here in the Newark Closet Studio with Mike Vorkunov, who is semi-awake, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, excuse me if I sound a little tired. It's because I am. as I'm sure you guys all know, we're taping this on a Tuesday, which means we are, I think, smack dab in the middle of the college basketball 24-hour marathon basketball palooza.
We're almost 12 hours in. It started at 12.
It seems so much longer.
Yeah. I think it's because of all the blowouts.
Oh, I thought you were, never mind. I thought you could just stop at blow, and I'm like, whoa. it is because of all the blowouts. We haven't had really that good of a game yet so far, even at the 12 o'clock game.
Yeah, the Washington State-Gonzaga was okay. I mean, it was an 8-point win. That kid went crazy. Was it Pangos?
Kevin Pangos. I think the best game so far has been Notre Dame-Detroit.
That was a good game.
That just missed the deadline.
Yeah, I was watching that, and then it kind of fell apart towards the end. But you were at Ryder Drexel at 6 a.m. tip-off. I was up, I watched till about the first half. It was tied, and then
I saw you on Twitter, and I felt bad for you. Because, you only got like 6 hours of sleep, and you're groggy. And
I have things to do today.
I know. You're a busy man.
Tell me a little bit about the atmosphere down at Lawrenceville.
It was weird. I saw the pictures. Steve Plitty was there 2 years ago for the St. Peter's game when they had the 6 o'clock game. And, there seemed like it was really fun and really hyped up, and there's all these great photos that we had. Today, there wasn't anything really like that. There was like one girl with a sign on her pillow. creative at least. But that was about it. It felt like another normal game just at 6 o'clock.
Just at 6 a.m.
The only weird part was like at halftime, I went out to like go get a drink or something, and I look and I'm like, whoa, it's light out.
Yeah.
And I honestly was surprised by that because I hadn't seen that, traveling from my house to there and then walking around the campus and everything. And that was the only thing that kind of shocked me.
Yeah. It's a nice concept. I like it. I think it's lost a little bit of its luster, the 6 a.m. games. But you know what? For those teams, for the Riders, the Drexels, some of these smaller mid-majors, it's the only opportunity to get on ESPN. So it's nice. Plus, it gives us a reason to talk about college basketball for an entire 24-hour period. But, of course, the talk of the 24-hour marathon is the games at 7, 8, and 9 tonight.
Yeah,
and that's the 7 p.m. game is Duke, Michigan State, Coach K going for win 903. The 8 p.m. game is Florida, Ohio State, Mike Rosario, Jaren Solinger. That's a great game there. And then the 9 p.m. game after the Duke game is Kentucky, Kansas. We're going to have a special guest, Brady McCullough of the Kansas City Star, and we'll talk about that later. But what are you looking for some of these games? We were talking about this earlier. This is the first time a lot of these big-name teams are going to get tested.
Yeah, I think after tonight, pretty much every top five team has been tested. North Carolina got their test in the Carrier Classic.
Yeah.
Kentucky really hasn't had anyone yet. But the one I'm actually really looking forward to is Florida-Ohio State.
Yeah, I think
that's the most even of all the matchups. I like Florida. I want to see how good Patrick Young is. And, he's going to get it right out of the chute with Jared Solinger. So we'll see right away how good he is. And then we'll see how Florida works their four-guard backcourt against the real team.
Right.
Which one are you looking for? I know you're looking forward to the Coach K going for
the 903. Coach, it's a historic game. I think that, the JV game, as everyone's joking about it, Kentucky-Kansas, I think is going to be a lot of fun because it's the first time I think most of the nation is going to get to see this class of Kentucky, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Teague, not to mention that, Terrence Jones still there. I think we can get to a good barometer on how good Kentucky really is. Kansas isn't a world beater. They're a good, solid Big 12 team, but they're a senior team. They're a more experienced team, I think. It'll be interesting, the little dichotomy there, young, old, experience, inexperience.
I think actually it has the most interesting one-on-one matchup. You have Anthony Davis playing the four for Kentucky, the freshman. And then you have Thomas Robinson, who's like a projected top 10 pick as a junior. Although I don't think we know anything about him.
No.
I'm sure Brady can speak to this when he comes on. But I know he's athletic and I know he's gifted and I know he's going to be a lottery pick. But I don't know why.
Right.
Like there's no substantive reason that we've seen.
Right. Yeah. I'm interested to see what they do. getting back to Florida, Ohio State, we saw this a little bit earlier. Mike Rosario, first game with the Gators over the weekend, 19 points. Surprising that he was able to shake off the rust or not have any rust coming out of the gate.
I don't think it's surprising. I don't think he's one of those guys who really gets rusty. Like
Right.
he puts up his shots. He's gonna get his shots, in practice, and then he's gonna make sure he gets his shots in the game. And it's not like he's a guy who plays with like a feel for the game.
Right.
He's a shooter. He gets his shots. He'll put them up. He gets a look. He'll hit it. So I'm not really surprised by that. I'll be surprised today if he drops, like 20 again against real competition because he
Right.
hasn't faced that in a while. He
Right.
faced, I forget who.
Jacksonville State, I think.
Right.
The Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dol there you go.
Fighting Dolphins.
I really hope that's their nickname.
I think it's the Dolphins. I don't think it's the Fighting Dolphins, but
You know which game I am interested in? The
what's
noon
that?
game, actually. Belmont. Which
Yeah,
put a real scare
a lot of
into
people
Duke.
are a lot of people are fired up about that. I think I
And
saw somewhere that
Memphis.
the line is 4.5, I want to say.
Memphis by 4.5.
I think so. I'm not a betting man. I'm terrible at bets,
Well,
but
if there's any sport you should bet on, it's definitely college basketball.
Yeah, that was interesting because we saw a little bit. We were at the the Rutgers season opener last Friday night, and a lot of us came in and saw Belmont in the final minutes against Duke. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one because Belmont won, what was it, 33 games, I want to say, last year. They
Yeah,
definitely won over
and I
30.
think they returned their entire lineup, if I
Yeah,
remember
or most of
correctly.
it. Yeah, that's you can give a scare to Duke at Cameron on
Yeah.
opening night. That's pretty impressive.
And I don't know if you noticed this, and this is really just absolutely nothing about nothing, but did you notice how Coach K, his drawing board is an exact replica, like just a
Of
miniature
Coach,
one of Coach K court?
yeah, that's pretty
That's
cool.
pretty baller.
Yeah, it's that's one of that's when you know you've arrived is when you have your name is on the court and your name that's on the court is also on your whiteboard. That's
That's how you get to 902 wins.
yeah. I don't think Bob Knight had that. Yeah, let's talk about 902 real quick. This is obviously the thing people are talking about. I mean, he's obviously going to get 903. Whether it happens tonight, down the line, at some point he's going to get 903. He's going to set the record and put it out of reach, right?
I assume as much. He came to Duke. How old was he?
He was 35 or 6, I want to say.
And he's been there almost 30 years at this
Yeah,
point.
30. This is his 32nd year at Duke.
Okay, 32nd. I assume so. Um,
He's 60. He'll be 65, I think, during the season or right after the season.
it, it's just so difficult. You know why? It's like saying there's never going to be another 300 win pitcher because
Right.
you say, well, the starting rotation size and all that, and here you've got, more parity in college basketball, and it's going to be tougher to continue to win these games, and you have to get there really early. And I guess, would
Yeah.
I be surprised if someone eventually gets there and coaches for 40 years? And
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though, is it's we're in such a we're no longer in a, I don't think in an age where a guy stays at one program for an entire year or for an entire, career. I think the days of the Krzyzewskis, the Boeheims, I know Calhoun started at Northeastern, but for all intents and purposes, he is Connecticut. Guys like that are no longer. I mean, even look at the success Ben Howland had at Pittsburgh, and jumped to UCLA. You
Yeah,
know, it's. I think we're guys are going to be lured at some point by the NBA. There's going to be a big, even if they're a big team in say an SEC, say in Alabama, someone. In another conference is going to offer up a bigger paycheck at some point because Alabama's not viewed as a basketball school. So I don't think we're ever going to see a guy with have a consistency of building a program and staying there where he's going to reach not over a th he's because Coach K is going to get over 1,000. I think we can all
if
agree
he
on that.
stays on for 3 more years,
Yeah, I
which
mean
he
that's the
probably
thing. Yeah,
will.
I mean he's going to get to at least 1,000. We would it's reasonably assumed. So you're going to look at someone who's going to have to coach for 35-ish years and have tremendous success for 33 of them.
And I think the reason why, really, I think this is maybe the biggest reason why not, is because to get to where Coach K is, to where Jim Calhoun, Boeheim are, there's a certain level of like idolatry that gets
Right.
attached to these coaches.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think maybe sports society is too cynical now to put those guys on that pedestal, and that helps them stay in places for so long.
Right. I mean,
Now,
look.
you see Howland, he had 3 straight Final Fours,
Right.
and I know UCLA is a great success, you know, with John Wooden and all that. But they want him out.
Right.
Like, I mean, you think that would earn you some.
He just suspended his best player.
Oh, yeah, Reeves Nelson not going to Maui.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I think everyone will point to Brad Stevens at Butler as, well, he's the guy that can
make a run. He probably has the best chance, right? Him right, or but Bill Self, maybe?
I guess Bill Self, but, you know.
Is he 50?
He's got to be 50, I think. Yeah.
Never mind.
But, I mean, like, you know, think about Brad Stevens. He's 39, 34? Maybe? 38, 39 in that range?
I don't think he's that old. We have to start doing fact-checking before we go on this
Well,
show.
Say he's in his mid-30s, right? Yeah. So even if he's reasonably the same age that Krzyzewski's, you know, was when he took over at Duke, he'd have to stay there for so long at Butler.
Well, remember, Coach K did start at Army.
I know. But the thing is like, when Brad Stevens, say in 5 years, Brad Stevens makes the jump to Indiana, right?
Right.
So Brad Stevens is now in Indiana. Indiana is right now a mid-level Big Ten program. That's where they've regressed under Tom Crean. So he's going to have to not only build it to the top, but stay there in a league that is so competitive. You know, that I think is the toughest part.
And, you know, I think what else kind of has to do with it, if I remember correctly, Coach K had some troubles the first few years at Duke.
Yeah.
If that happens now, even that's if it is you're, pressing, you're out.
That's
or in 95, they had a bad year, maybe.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is Coach K always says, you know, he's loyal to Duke because they were loyal to him during those lean years in the early 80s when he took over, and people wanted this guy who, you know, he was preaching, like, please, just let me just see this out. It will work. I'm telling you. And people wanted him out. And, you know, credit to the Duke, you know, ADs and the higher-ups, they said, you know what, this is our guy. We're going to stick to him.
Yeah, I don't know if you can do that anymore, especially with all the money involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the most interesting game other than that today is on a local level, Rutgers and Miami, Rutgers going down to Miami. And, you know, this is kind of the test that they're going to need. They surprisingly got tested in their opener against Dartmouth. Dartmouth, supposed to be last in the Ivy League, gave them a real scare. And, you know, you saw those freshmen, they looked tentative, they looked scared of angering Mike Rice at times. And now they face a good Miami team. They don't have Reggie Johnson, but they have a very good backcourt. And going on the road right away, second game, we'll see really the kind of metal that they have. Because their talent really isn't a question at this point. You know they have it. It's how quickly they can squeeze it out and make it actual production. And going down to Miami, we're going to see that. And we're going to see how comfortable Mike Rice is with his rotation, because he had 11 guys in there. I think he had 10 guys in the first 4 minutes. Is he going to do that against Miami? Does he just want to see everyone and how they do, and then he'll pick from that litter? Or we'll see if he has a rotation that he's comfortable with. And I think we have our guest on the line now, right?
We do.
Perfect. You want to give him a nice intro?
Yeah. Well, we're going to welcome the hardest working man in the business, Brady McCullough, the Kansas City Star of the program. Brady, it's Mike and Brendan. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, guys. I don't know about that description, but because I know Brendan works pretty hard. So,
well, you were the guy who was always arriving late at the Masters house last year, so I got to give you the title.
Well, maybe I just wasn't being very efficient.
Well, that is every 5 minutes a Kansas player was going pro, so I have to, so you were behind the eight ball on that one.
Yeah, and recruits were committing to Kansas. We have all types of program movement there.
Well, I'm sure, you know, we were just talking a little bit earlier about, you know, the game tonight, Kansas, Kentucky. I mean, you're with these guys. You know them better than anybody else. I mean, is this Kansas team ready for, you know, a talented group like Kentucky?
You know, that's the big question. I mean, I think this is a different kind of Kansas team than what we've been used to. You know, this is not a team loaded with surefire NBA talent. You know, they've got some guys that certainly probably will play in the NBA, but I mean, talent-wise, there is a disparity between them and Kentucky. What Kansas does have is five capable players in the starting lineup who are upperclassmen. So, you know, Tyshawn Taylor is a senior guard who started, you know, 89 games or something like that. You know, Thomas Robinson played a little bit last year and was amazing in spurts. And the question with him is can he stay out of foul trouble, and can he, you know, keep the motor that he plays with going you know, for 30 minutes a game and not pick up fouls. But in general, I think this is a team that's, they've been around the program, the starting lineup, each guy's been around the program at least two and a half years. So, you know, I really think that, that's the way they can play, that they can hang with Kentucky, is that they've got more experience. Kentucky, you know, I'm curious how their freshmen are going to handle this stage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're, I could see them playing, and not that I don't know much about these freshmen, but I just know these guys are all, like, you know, one-and-done types and kind of want to make a name for themselves, and they're playing in the Garden. I can just see them really struggling tonight a little bit to play team basketball. I could see individual-type thoughts getting into some of their heads and just kind of the moment overcoming that a little bit.
Hey, Brady, I have a question for you, and I was talking about this with Brendan earlier, and it's about Thomas Robinson, who's going to face Anthony Davis tonight. I know he's good, and I know he's supposed to be a first-round pick, and I know he's hyped, but I don't know why, because we haven't seen him, and it's very odd to see a guy get to where he is, you know, into his third year of college and not really know that much about him. Usually you're either gone by then or you've blown up, and there's a reason, a substantive reason, why people are really hyped on you.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's rare that you have a junior get so much hype when, you know, he played 14 minutes a game last year. The reason being he played 14 minutes a game was the Morris twins were there, and, you know, he wasn't better than those guys. Those guys are incredibly skilled big men. Who could do so many things. And Thomas, especially last year, he's a motor guy. The skilled aspect of his game is still coming along, but he's got just a motor that the coaches rave about, and extremely athletic, extremely raw, great rebounder. What we're seeing at the beginning of this year is he spent the summer going to camps and things like that and really trying to work on his game with Danny Manning, who's one of the best big man coaches in the country. So I think, you know, he's going to be on display tonight. We're going to see a lot of what he's been working on, I think, post moves wise, with a face up game. He's been working on probably, you know, 15 to 18 foot jump shot. It's looked pretty good at times, but I'm not sure how comfortable self is with him taking that in certain scenarios. You make a good point about Thomas, and it's kind of rare for a guy to be a junior and be getting this much hype without having actually accomplished that much. Part of it also is this, you know, unbelievable family story that occurred with him last year, which got him a lot of notoriety for very sad reasons.
Yeah, that was why I think that, you know, Robinson sort of burst onto the national scene, because that story was so, you know, unbelievably, like you said, sad. Do I guess NBA people or scouts or other teams see maybe that as some sort of a sign for leadership quality out of him?
Yeah, I think people, I definitely think him going through what he went through is, you know, just for people who don't know what happened, he lost his maternal grandparents within 3 weeks in December and January. And then his mom, under a lot of stress because her parents just died, started having headaches and a lot of, you know, health issues, and then she died the Friday night before KU played Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Thomas Robinson played in that game under those circumstances wowed everybody. And then the fact that, you know, a week later he comes back and they play K-State now in Fieldhouse, very kind of emotional outpouring, you know, a Thomas Robinson love fest in the Fieldhouse, and he just pretty much dominated K-State. So those things, I think people do see this is a special kid, you know, who is very, very mentally tough, having gone through all this.
Mm-hmm. Bree, you know the Big 12 landscape. I mean, how is Kansas going to fit into this league this year? I mean, everyone obviously knows that, you know, Missouri's good and you know, but I don't know if anyone really has a handle on. It seems like the league's almost more wide open than it has been in years past.
No, that's exactly it. It's wide open, and in the Big 12, when it's wide open, you know, I think the coaches pick Kansas this year to win it. I think a combination of things. One, by default, out of respect, that they've won seven in a row, but also I think the coaches take an opportunity to. They know this isn't a great Kansas team, So let's put the bullseye on them and maybe add a little more pressure to try and get to them. Because
nefarious coaches.
There really isn't a clear-cut team. I mean, Baylor's the most talented team, you know, NBA-wise, but Scott Drew hasn't proven he can coach these guys up at all. You know, they play that wacky zone defense, and they've got a lot of length, and I'm just not convinced that they're going to, you know, reach their potential. I don't like Missouri's talent that much. I don't like A&M's talent that much. They both have a lot of returners, but they've also got new coaches. So I think this is the perfect year for Self to have a team that's not as loaded as some of his other teams have been, because I think the league sets up pretty well.
Well, Brady, let me ask you a question about that. It seems like, with, like you were saying, Kansas not as talented as years past. They still kind of give him the benefit of the doubt, while they kind of hedge their bets with Baylor, who's uber talented, but really hasn't shown it yet. I mean, do you think that this can be the year that Baylor breaks out and has all those guys come close to reaching their potential, because they have so much talent, especially in the front court? Can they put it all together and make a run, you know, maybe to the Final Four? Do you see that happening at all?
I mean, they've definitely got the talent to do it. We all know that. I'm just not last year was just, you know, they were so tough to watch. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm too close to it. But, I mean, I remember it was a big Monday game, Kansas-Baylor down there, and he went down there and just shredded their zone and shot like 70% from the field in the first half. I mean, it was just, it looked like Baylor had, you know, just wasn't playing hard or didn't know what they were doing. I mean, it was just, they just, Kansas just killed them. That was a really good KU team, obviously, but that memory sticks with me. I'm just like, I just feel like a Self team, you know, is going to be able to figure out a way at least to beat Baylor and Allen Fieldhouse. But to your bigger point, I do think that this Baylor team definitely has the potential to make a Final Four run. I'm just really not sold on Drew's ability to motivate these guys who are kind of one and done types. And I say that, and Perry Jones decides to come back for his sophomore year. Mm-hmm. So obviously he likes something about Baylor.
or not so playing that, in the NBA.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, I think the Morris twins, I'd love to know how much they wish they were playing in this game in the Garden.
We'll throw one last one at you, Brady. And you, since you're our first guest of the year, you get the dubious honor of leading off. Everyone we're going to have on here this year, we're going to ask them their Final Four picks and national championship. Now, I know it's November 15th and we're two games into the season, but who do you like and who do you like cutting down the nets in New Orleans?
Well, yeah, you guys put me on the spot a little bit here.
Brendan didn't prep you for that?
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and throw Kentucky in there. I think they're so talented, and Cal's going to have them playing better, you know, good defense and playing hard, and I think they'll make the Final Four. And then after that, you know, Ohio State's got to make it one of these years. You know, I'm a Michigan grad, so it pains me to say that, but you know, I think Aaron Kraft is going to be such a difference maker playing more minutes this year. And obviously Sullinger is great, so I'll say Ohio State. I'm really not maybe it's because I cover KU and I hear all these, you know, bitter things about Roy Williams all the time, but I'm not a believer. I feel like Roy's teams are, this team's really talented, but it also looks a little soft, and I'm not totally convinced that Henson and Zeller and those big men, you know, I guess I could see them losing before the Final Four, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
really?
Let's go ahead and throw them in there, though, just because they are so immensely talented. I think there's a drop-off after them in Kentucky and talent across the country. So I'll throw them in there, but I'm not convinced on them. And, I got one more. Dang, off the top of my head, I really don't want to say UConn. Dang. About the whole country here.
I think Brendan, who was your sleeper team?
My sleeper team, I had Memphis.
You had Memphis. I had Florida.
Okay. I can't get behind Memphis.
Vanderbilt? If we're just going to go solely SEC teams, apparently.
Yeah, I can't.
Well, you got, me. Let's see, you got Syracuse, Duke, Louisville, Pitt, Xavier, Wisconsin, Arizona. There's your alma mater.
Yeah, I'm not looking so good this early. You know what? I'll go to UConn.
UConn?
Yeah, I don't want to, but I will. So I don't like that Final Four. One, I think it's too obvious.
Yeah.
I don't really have a real sleeper in there. Yeah, you guys put me on the spot. That's what you get.
Well, I mean, I think there's one more question to be answered then. Who you got taking it down? Sounds like you were leading Kentucky there. You seem pretty forthright about them.
Kentucky. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing them tonight, seeing what they really look like, and imagining what they could be in March. But right now, there's so much talent, and I do think Cal's a better coach than people give him credit for.
Agreed.
I think he'll have these guys on point by March. So, yeah, I'll go Kentucky.
Awesome. Well, Brady McCall is on the board with Kentucky, and Brady, we appreciate the time very much. We will see you tonight at the Garden and perhaps down in New Orleans.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Brady. And Brendan, so I realized this before we go on, and I think I told you this. We spent all that time on our Final Four picks and our sleepers and our double sleepers. We didn't pick national champions.
That's why I was thinking about this morning. I said, you know what? It's going to be a thing we're going to do every week when we have a guest on, is to get a Final Four and a national championship pick, because your comment last week spurred me on. So we did the Final Fours.
Yeah.
Who you got as a national championship?
You know what? I'm going to go exactly the opposite of what Brady was saying, how he has so much hesitation about North Carolina. I really like the Tar Heels. I think Kendall Marshall is probably the best point guard in the country. And when you have Tyler Zeller, who I think is actually underrated, I know that's not possible, but him and John Henson in that front court, and they have so much depth. I think they're too talented, and I think Roy Williams is too good of a coach to not let that team win it all. And he's done it before there. I think that they're the team this year.
Yeah, I think Carolina gets the title game, and I think they win. And here, this is I think my championship pick. I think, you know, I had my Final Four was Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, and Louisville.
That got hurt a little bit with Mike Mara.
It did, yeah. So Memphis is sliding closer. but I think the national title game is going to be Carolina, Duke, and I think Carolina wins. Now I'm big on, you know, that would be an unbelievable. I mean, can you imagine Carolina Duke at the title game in New Orleans?
Yeah.
I mean, there wouldn't be anyone. I don't even think the media would be able to get in. but I think those are going to be they're the two most, I think, experienced teams along with the most talented teams. I know Duke is a little younger than Carolina, but I don't know. I just think the Coach K factor plays a heavy hand in that.
And I think with their, like, what, seven Plumlees?
Yeah.
I think they're a team that can handle UNC in the front court. You know, if anyone can, because they have the size and they have the length and they have Ryan Kelly. So you really need a team that's deep in the front court. And Duke is one of the teams that can almost measure up there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I guess I should pick a final team. You know, see, now we have to rely on the NCAA and seeding and all that thing. I guess Kentucky UNC is too easy.
Right.
You know, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go Florida.
Really?
Okay. I'm going to go Florida UNC final right now. Put on the board.
So you're on the board with UNC. I'm on the board with UNC. Brady's on the board with Kentucky.
I feel like I'm putting too much stock in Mike Rosario.
They're a good team.
They are.
You got to stay if you're gonna pull that gun out. You got to stick behind your guns.
No, I am. It's gonna be a Florida UNC final. UNC is gonna take it down. Just still nervous. Just a little bit nervous. I guess we'll see tonight. We'll see how they do against Ohio State and Jared Sullinger, and they can make me look foolish really, really quickly.
Yeah. I know when I stepped out for a second there, you were talking about Rutgers and Miami tonight.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you touched on, you know, the Rutgers season opener or the Seton Hall season opener.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I kind of touched on the season opener. They look, I'd say, tentative against Dartmouth. You know, Rice said that he felt like the freshmen were scared of making mistakes and making them angry, and Baruta said the same thing bluntly.
Right.
And I feel like that just happens in the first game.
Yeah. I don't know how much you got to see the Seton Hall game Saturday night.
Very sparse.
Yeah. I think the problem with Seton Hall will be, and it reared its ugly head against St. Francis, is that when they play teams that are deep, St. Francis is running in, I think, 12 guys at one point, they're going to run into troubles because two fouls essentially takes one player out in college basketball for an extended period of time. When you get guys in two foul situations, he's off the board. Mm-hmm. And Seton Hall right now does not have the bodies. They got Sean Grennan back after the appendectomy surgery. They got him back Monday for practice. He'll probably be available this weekend in the Charleston Classic. They're still waiting on Brandon Mobley with the shoulder surgery. But I think even then, you're bringing in two freshmen. I don't know, how much they're going to add right away. They have talent. Jordan Theodore, I think, showed you that he can be the guy who scores. I mean, he took probably a little too many shots.
That's what I want to know. What do you think of Jordan Theodore 2.0? He's got a new number. It seems like he's got a new perspective in how he wants to play.
Yeah,
as well.
I think we saw a little bit, and Kevin Willard alluded to this after the game, is that he's a guy, he wants to do so much that oftentimes he tries to do too much. Mm-hmm. And there were many times during the meat of that game, sort of the second half of the first half and the first half of the second half, where there's nobody that could score. And, Fuquan Edwin had foul trouble. Patrick Outa had foul trouble. You know, they were doubling down on Herb, sometimes even tripling down. So, Aaron Cosby couldn't score. Freddie Wilson just looked lost at times. Aaron Jaramifor, is not there. So who's going to score the ball? And people were killing him for taking too many shots. I think he has to, he's got to take those shots, because otherwise Seton Hall's not scoring any points.
Right, right. I think what was really good for them coming out of that was Herb Pope, though.
Yeah.
He had 21 and 14.
A very quiet double-double.
Yeah.
Very quiet.
And it seems like he's back to what he was 2 years ago.
Right.
Athleticism-wise.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
Because that was a big issue for him last year.
Yeah,
the weight he was carrying.
He didn't.
Well,
there were oftentimes games where he would look tired and sluggish and wouldn't have the same up.
Right.
In midway through a second half, to get a rebound, and he was getting out muscled by guards and smaller players and stuff like that. And it was St. Francis, the first game of the season. I don't like putting all of my eggs in one basket. But he did look good. He looked like he was regaining a semblance of himself. We're going to wrap it up real quick. What are you looking for over the between now and when we're on the air next? What are you looking for? What are you looking at in college basketball?
I think locally, you want to see how the freshmen do for Rutgers.
Yep.
I think that's how quickly they can meld all those guys together and they become comfortable with Mike Rice. And I mean specifically Mike Rice, not a system. But how he coaches that team and his in-your-face type of style, which I think got to him in the opener against Dartmouth. And that's going to really say a lot. And I think for Seton Hall, it's going to be Jordan Theodore and how he's able to understand that distributor scorer kind of versatility that he needs to have and when to play one or the other and work that boundary.
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see what Seton Hall does in the Charleston Classic, because I think that's a nice test for them. The field's not overwhelmingly, it's good teams, but there's no team that I would say, oh wow, that team's going to win hands down. I mean, Northwestern's probably the most talented team, but am I going to say that, Wichita State or VCU or St. Joe's or Georgia Tech can't beat them? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Nationally, I'm really curious to see what happens in UCLA. They had that awful loss to start the season at home against Loyola Marymount. Josh Smith looked bad. Then now we've got the situation with Reeves Nelson. He was suspended, I think, late last night by Ben Howland for he's going to miss the Maui Invitational, mm-hmm. which begins next week. That's a weird situation because, like you alluded to earlier, the heat is on Howland, surprisingly, even though he's been to three Final Fours there.
Yeah.
And has the number one recruiting class. Or
he has Kyle Anderson. He might get Shabazz Muhammad.
Right. I mean, he's got players coming in.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what happens in this next week with Ben Howland. I mean, they need to have a good – if they bow out early in the Maui,
yeah,
it could be a long year.
And I hate to stay west as well, but I'm kind of interested to see what happens in Arizona. Josiah Turner got benched because he was you know, kind of angered Sean Miller, and he's really talented, and they need him this year because they're kind of thin otherwise, I feel like. And if they can get all those freshmen to go, that's a team that could win the Pac-12 this year. But if he's already like this so early into his freshman season, this could be like a disastrous year for the Wildcats.
Yeah.
And Sean Miller could just have an entire year of headaches, and he has a great class for next year, but this could be a really difficult season.
Yeah.
And there's no Pac-12 favorite then. No UCLA, no Arizona. I feel like just a week into the season, we already don't know what's up.
Yeah, the Pac-12 is going to be. I still think Washington's the team to beat there.
Can I throw one team out there?
Shoot,
Gonzaga. Loved what I saw from them.
You'll find no bigger proponent of Gonzaga than me.
Flint couldn't go to sleep because he was watching Kevin Pangos just drill threes. I'm telling you.
We begin the show with Pangos, and we end the show with Pangos. We're so glad you could join us again for the second episode of the Star Ledger College Basketball Podcast. Brendan Prunty, Mike Vorkunov signing off. We'll catch you next week.